Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of 5-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Series 7, episode... Is it episode 9? I think it's episode 9. It's episode 8. It's episode 9! Oh, Suze, come on. Can you tell that it is 9:40 on a Sunday and I went to a wedding last night? Not hungover, just quite tired. Quite tired. But here we are. I went to a lesbian wedding as well. Oh, it was fantastic. We had such a good time. Laura Checkley, who you'll know from the podcast, it was her wedding. And we had a wonderful time. She married her beautiful partner, Claire. We had just the best time. Anyway, we're not here to hear about what I've been up to. We're here to have another gorgeous episode of Out. I am very excited to share today's episode with you. It's a conversation with someone that I've never had on this show. Harry Nicholas is a lovely man that I had the pleasure of spending some time with. He is a trans guy who is gay, and he's recently written a book called A Trans Man Walks Into a Gay Bar, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And we have such an interesting conversation, and I love spending time with him. And I think that you're going to love it too. But before that, as always, we have some brilliant listener emails. Dear Susie, I'm a long-time listener of both Out and Like-Minded Friends, and a big fan of your comedy. I never really felt the need to get in contact, but I had some thoughts today, and you asked for some more emails, so here I go. Content warning, it's a brief mention of being suicidal. I'm a queer woman living in the Netherlands, and yesterday was the 35th birthday of my favourite queer women's bar, Sorin. Today they posted a picture of when the bar first opened in 1988. Depicting a group of cheerful queer women and, of course, a cat. I found myself getting very emotional and crying. I imagine what it would have been like for me to have grown up in a place where already 35 years ago I could have walked into my favourite women's bar, where 46 years ago pride-like marches were organised and 22 years ago marriage equality was established. It made me emotional because I was not fortunate enough to grow up here. I was raised in a small, non-religious but conservative country where being anything but straight is just really not a thing. I knew of a few men on TV who were said to be, in inverted commas, homo, and I knew it was something negative, but no one was publicly out and there was no mention on media of any queerness. Only in my mid-teens, when I moved to another country and studied in an international school, did I learn about some queer content. My reference points were I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry, Queer as Folk, the Canadian version, The L Word and Skins. But despite these gems, I remained ardently straight. I moved to Dublin for university and started to slowly realise how gay I am. I was battling with falling in love with my best friend and other queer thoughts, deeply ashamed and eventually suicidal. Similar to how Jess Foster Q described her experience, I felt like there wasn't a way for me to be queer, that it was just not something I internally was or could be, and so there was no way to overcome that struggle. I tried to get help from mental health professionals, but I was told that I was not suicidal enough. That's heartbreaking. I'm really sorry that happened. I knew other queer people and respected them, but I didn't want this gayness to be part of my narrative. I started frequenting queer women's club nights to experiment so that I could just know for sure that I was gay. While it was hard for me to go to a club alone, it was a useful exercise as it allowed me to gain some confidence and reassurance. I started coming out to some people and felt relieved and less ashamed. Now, after many queer partners and years of consuming queer culture, I'm a proud queer woman living my best life. My family's response to my coming out was not great at first, but now they're a lot more used to that quirk of young people. That said in inverted commas. For them, as for me, there never was an older generation of queers. The homos on TV were not a community. Lesbian, bis and trans people essentially did not exist in our country. To this day, I have no older queer role models from my country. Being from there and being queer is a radical act in itself. That's why I find it so amazing there are older queer communities in the Netherlands as well as parts of the UK. While I'm not originally from here, I am part of the queer community now, and I have past generations to look up to. And I can be that annoying foreigner every now and then that starts ranting about how we shouldn't take any of these things for granted. That's all from me today. I assume this is too long to be read out, but feel free to do so. Thank you for the podcast and all the amazing work you do. I would have loved this resource when I was struggling, but I'm glad that it's here now for all the other baby queers. Okay, bye. Bye, 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 bye. And they've asked to remain anonymous. Thank you so much for your email. It really moved me. And I really connected to it. It's so wonderful to have older queer communities and older people within our friendship groups or just in our, on our scene, as I say, in our community, to know that, you know, they were there before us. And I think it's, I often find it makes me a bit emotional sometimes, actually, because quite often some older queer people will come to my tour shows and I might chat to them afterwards and they'll say, oh, we've been together for 40 years or something like that. And I just think, oh my gosh, I have all these rights because of people like you. I can live openly because you were brave enough to. And I am always so moved by it. And yeah, I just totally understand where you're coming from. And though you didn't see anyone in your country who was out, I imagine they existed. They were somewhere. They were somewhere in the shadows trying to live authentically. At least I assume we're everywhere, aren't we? We're everywhere. But thank you so much for your email and thank you for sharing that photo with me. As she mentioned, it's a group of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 queer women, one's on another one's lap. They're all laughing. They're really smiling. There's a cat on someone's lap. And yeah, it looks like a good time. It really does. Thank you for sharing that with me. And to keep the international theme, I really wanted to share this message as well. Hello, Susie. I'm a gay guy from Slovakia. I'm a huge fan of your podcast and your stand-up. Like-Minded Friends is such a fun and comforting podcast and often helps me to calm down my anxiety. But I wanted to thank you for making Out. It's great we can access queer culture from all over the world these days. It's really helpful to be able to plug into these queer communities in more progressive countries and see what is possible. In this part of Europe, the situation with gay rights is not great, and there's a growing conservative backlash, even before we made significant progress. The darkest of these moments was last year when two men were killed in front of a gay bar by a homophobic right-wing radical. Your podcast and your comedy are important and very, very entertaining, not just for queer people in Britain, but you and others reach and help people far away. It's nice to have a little light on the horizon. I especially wanted to thank you for being a trans ally. Unfortunately, the latest wave of transphobia coming from Britain and the West is very scary, and it's amazing to see that you're willing to stand up for trans people, even if you're a public figure and you often face abuse. If I may, I'd like to suggest a guest I think would have a lot to say to your listeners. The war in Ukraine causes so much suffering to everybody in Ukraine, but being occupied by Russia is especially dangerous for queer Ukrainians. And at the same time, the queer community in Ukraine is making steady progress, especially since 2014. Oliver has then given me a couple of names of people that he thinks I should get in touch with, which I'm going to do today. I'm going to do that today, Oliver, and see if I can get them on the show. I think you're absolutely right. I think I would love to know what they have to say. And then he says, thank you so much and all the best to you and your loved ones. And as I said, that was from Oliver. Oliver, this message meant so much to me. When I started making the podcast, I didn't really consider that it would end up all over the world in places where there's more homophobia, more transphobia, more people that just hate people like us for no reason. And the fact that it gets all over the world, yeah, it's amazing. And I really hope that this little piece of, someone described it once as a bit of pride in your pocket. I really hope that it It supports you when you need it. That's what I really hope. If that doesn't sound too cheesy, I think it might, but I don't care. I don't care. I'm earnest. That's who I am. Right. Thank you, Oliver. And thank you to the other person that wrote in. Two very moving emails today, I felt, and I wanted to share both of them with you. Okay. Now let's move on to today's conversation with Harry Nicholas. I really hope that you enjoy this. I loved this chat. Here it is. Now, very often on this podcast, I receive emails for book recommendations. So I've got a brilliant episode for you today. Harry Nicholas is a writer, campaigner and gay trans man living in London. He has contributed to articles for The Huffington Post, Forbes, BBC Newsbeat, BBC Three, Things Not to Say to a Trans Person and Pink News. And in May, he releases his first book, A Trans Man Walks into a Gay Bar. I've just started reading it and I'm loving it. I immediately connected to Harry's writing and storytelling. It's intimate, raw and unflinchingly honest. The book follows Harry in the sometimes fraught and contradictory worlds of contemporary gay culture as a gay trans man. From grinder dating to gay bars to saunas to sex and ultimately to falling in love. Harry's is a story of hope. A brave and uplifting journey that will show you that there is joy in finding exactly who you are. I'm delighted to be talking to him today. Welcome to the show, Harry.
Thank you. That's such a kind introduction.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm nervous. Like, the book comes out as we're recording in a couple of months' time.
Yes.
And I have that imposter syndrome that even though I have actually written a book and it is, I've got a cover with my name on it, like, am I actually an author?
Yes, and you are. You got to grab it with both hands.
Yeah, so it feels strange. And because there's so much of myself in the book and
yes.
the people that I know and love, it feels very vulnerable position mm-hmm. to be in, especially as I imagine, you know, people come up to you all the time, I imagine, and know so much about you. And
yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. Other, you know, and that's sort of started happening. And it's like, what's your name? Sorry. Like, you know, the imbalance is interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm nervous, but also some nice reviews have been coming in now. So just settle my nerves just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure it will get plenty more of those great reviews. And it's, I mean, I mentioned it's unflinchingly honest. I mean, as I said when you came in and sat down, I've only just, that makes it sound like I was interviewing you for a job. But when you came in, I said, I've just started reading it and I'm loving it. I think that you have a real ease with which you sort of grab the reader. I feel like I know you, even though I'm only a few chapters in. There's a lovely way of, I think, drawing the audience in. And I felt like I sort of knew who you were straight away. But you said, oh, the second half of the book gets a bit raunchy.
Yeah, it does.
And I think that's something that we don't hear an awful lot about, certainly not outside of the trans community. I'm sure it's conversations that happen within the trans community, but in the wider queer community and indeed the wider world, sex isn't something that is spoken about a lot unless it's maybe fetishized? Is that fair
yeah,
to say?
Yeah, I think that's true. And actually, some years back, I made a film which actually incidentally became my coming out film. It wasn't ever intended in that. It was just meant to be like a university small project.
Right.
And it kind of accidentally went viral because it was at that time of the transgender tipping point where people were suddenly become fascinated with our lives. And yeah, it went viral, had a couple of million views. And then I was invited to go to the US on a set of Transparent,
right?
Then, which has now been cancelled. But at the time, I spoke to the producers there, and I said, "When are we going to have a trans sex scene? Because no one talks about trans sex, even though it's such an important part of everybody's life." That was something that was really important to me to also include in the book that trans people have sex and also choose not to have sex if they don't want to, if they're asexual, and why isn't anyone talking about this? Everyone talks about gender, but not how sex interrelates with that. So it was important to me not to miss that out, even though it's a difficult conversation around bodies and intimacy and rejection and fear and all those things. I felt it was, very, very important to include it.
And so how long have you been working on the book? Did you know, I know that you said when we were emailing about you coming on the show, that you were sort of looking for this book. And it didn't exist. Is that how it happened? That you were, well, I'm going to have to write it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So I was kind of in Gaze the Word, and I'd just been through a breakup, and that's where the book starts. At this kind of point that I think most people can relate to of a breakup that went sort of, you know, was you thought it was going to be the rest of your life, and then suddenly it wasn't, and you're kind of in that. You know, when that happened to me, I was just learning what it was to be a man and an adult, and I was very disorientated. So that's where the book starts, and then I can explore things from there. But in those kind of months of bewilderment, I went into Gaze the Word, the bookshop in London. And
brilliant bookshop.
Brilliant, yeah, fantastic. And I've, you know, been going there for ages and ages, and kind of toured their shelves and was looking for stuff about being trans and stuff about being gay, and I couldn't find it. So there was, you know, everything under the sun apart from the one thing that I was looking for. And
that's quite isolating as
Yeah, it is, especially when, you know, I thought that that would be the place, you know. So I couldn't find anyone that looked like me. And this is a huge part of the book, is about archiving my and other people's realities, because it's missed in history so much. So when I was writing, I was very aware that this was a piece of history that was being written, as well as it being in the moment. And I think possibly a lot of that shines through because my fascination with queer history throughout, that comes in a lot more later on in the book in terms of how I feel and my relationship to that history. But yeah, that's exactly it. I wanted to write because I couldn't see myself anywhere else. And Lou Sullivan, his diaries, Young Man, came out in 2021, just after I started writing the book. And there's a quote that he has in that his diary saying, "I want to look like me, but I don't know what someone like me looks like." Right. And I've really, that really struck a chord with me, because there isn't any gay trans masculine figures. Like, how do I know what a future is if I can't see it? And so that was a really important part of writing and where the whole idea came from, really.
It's surprising that you couldn't find anything like that, but so brilliant that your book is now going to exist, because no one will feel like that again.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is that on the course of writing, I found these people. So they absolutely do exist, and they exist in history. It's just that they're not pushed to their front or not talked about very often. So now I have, in fact, I found another one of my gay trans masculine friends on Grindr, and now we're like really close and go to the theatre all the time and stuff. And so these communities come together, and now, you know, I know dozens of gay trans men. In fact, you know, I'm in a WhatsApp group with trans men who like to go cruising and go to saunas. I mean, it's just kind of, I found this community through writing, which is amazing. And it's nice that that's starting to happen now.
Absolutely. So let's go back even further. I know that you grew up just outside of Manchester. As has happened before, actually, when trans people have come on the podcast, you've had sort of a number of coming outs. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what were you like as a child?
I'd say I was quite confused, but also very confident. I found it confusing because in one, and I'm going to be very stereotypical here, but this is exactly how I was at the time, is that I was fascinated by football and wanted to watch Manchester United, and I get the criticism of Manchester United. In the same breath, you know, I got a jewellery set from my auntie, and it was kind of, you know, these glitter, you know, you can make a bracelet, and I kind of wanted to do both. And I think I saw my mum, you know, being slightly worried and anxious that I was wanting to do football stuff all the time and have a, you know, top with my name on the back of it, and also relax a little bit when I was starting to play more with Barbies and dolls and stuff like that. So I think it was quite confused. It wasn't that I was typically in one camp, I guess, but I think largely I was very tomboyish. And when I was younger, that wasn't a problem. You know, it was kind of like, oh, you'll grow out of it. You'll grow out of it. You know, being a tomboy, that's fine. You can be adventurous. You can be sporty. And then as I hit puberty, that was becoming more and more a problem. It was kind of, well, how are people going to perceive you? And you get put in, as you go through puberty, you get put into these narrower and narrower boxes of what other people might think. And so it became more of a challenge. But I went to an all-girls school. My family, they fought really hard to get me into an all-girls school and gave everything that they could to get me there because of their own sort of background and not having that available to them.
And was it a good school?
I would... It was all right.
On paper.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those, like, it was in Oldham, just outside of Manchester, and it was fee-paying and academic, but it wasn't, like, your Eton or anything like that. They fought really hard to get me into there to give me a better life. And then, of course, actually putting a trans masculine person, although I didn't realise that necessarily at the time, into an all-girls environment was challenging.
Yeah.
And has its own sort of issues in that.
Yeah,
and so
of course.
I came even more isolated.
At Outback Steakhouse, your wish is our command. Backed by popular demand, steak and lobster at a special price starting at $19.99. Come enjoy our bold center-cut sirloin seasoned with our signature blend of 17 spices and paired with a buttery, succulent lobster tail. Hurry into Outback Steakhouse where your steak and lobster wishes come true at a price you can't miss. Steak and lobster, starting at $19.99. No rules, just right.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
And so, please correct me at my language, because I don't want to get it wrong. But I know that you identified as a lesbian for a while. And so was it at school? Was that in your teenage years? Because I can only, obviously, like anyone does, I relate from my perspective.
Yeah.
And I remember having feelings towards girls and feeling, you know, outside. Probably from about 14. That was when those feelings really started stirring for me and I became really aware of them. Obviously, you were dealing with so much more than what I was dealing with fancying the girls. How did that sort of manifest itself in you?
Yeah, it was slightly strange. So I think a lot of people expected me to be a lesbian because of my masculine presentation, which is a theme throughout the book, really, of how strange it is that we assign sexual identity based on how we present, which is very gendered.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the basic kind of psychology of it is that sex is, and sexual identity is one thing and gender is another, but actually they intertwine and interconnect so much that was the reason why I felt very confused, because I did like women, but I don't know whether I admired them or thought they were like my best friends or that we really got on or whether I fancied them. I wasn't sure, but because a lot of people expected me to be a lesbian and bullied me accordingly, you know, being in the dressing room, getting changed for PE, it was all like, you know, miss, you know, she's looking at me, you know, she's a lesbian and everything. And so because I was like, what do other people know that I don't? Mm. And I found it very confusing. But at the same time, I really liked boys. I really fancy boys. And I was confused about whether I wanted to be them or date them, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I kind of had this conflict of, I'm a lesbian, I think people expect me to be, I stereotypically dress and I'm that kind of stereotype, but also I do fancy boys, so what does that mean? And so I did date girls and, you know, got on really well in a lot of my friendship group in school, I didn't choose this at 11, but they became out as queer, you know, as we progressed through school.
We're often drawn to each other, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know what it is, but there's something in you that I have in me.
There is.
That can we please sit next to each other and have our lunch?
And so, you know, we just started as a friendship group that met on the first day of school in year 7. And then by year 11, we were all raging queers.
Right, great.
And so a lot of my friends were lesbian or bi or, you know, thinking about whether they were non-binary or not. And so that's kind of how I identified at the time. And that was because I didn't know that being trans was an option. I'd never heard of the word before. I think it's amazing that we now have children, you know, as young as like 11. I met a young trans masculine kid at 11 on a camp, like trans camp a few years ago, which I was helping out on. And I was like, how amazing that you know that Yeah, I hadn't even heard the word.
Mm.
So it was quite a shock to me, actually, when I realised that transness was a thing. And I was
right.
like, oh my God, this, what does this mean for okay. me? It was a real like punch in the gut. It was terrifying
yeah.
because I realised that I was trans through Waterloo Road. There was an right, episode okay. on Waterloo Road. And I know people at my school were obsessed with it,
right.
you know, and it was kind of the, you went home on a Wednesday night and watched Waterloo Road and you come talk about it the next day. And I couldn't talk about that episode the next day. I went silent for pretty much a year. You know, I was struggling to find my words. And that episode, particularly, it was a trans woman that came out and essentially she was wanting to kill herself at the end of it. And I thought, what does this mean? Is this what transness is? You know, I'm the other way around. And I got on the phone to my best friend at the time, Ellie, and who also we were communicating, watching Lip Service at the time mm-hmm. as well. And I really associated with Frankie. He was quite angry, quite butch in some respects. And I was like, I'm kind of between these two characters and I don't really know what I am or who I am. But I was like, but I think I'm trans. And she said, yes, I think you are.
Wow. So, so how old were you then?
I was 15. 15.
That's, I mean, that's, I know you were saying about the 12-year-old, but that's a lot on a 15-year-old's shoulders, isn't it? Of like, okay, well, how the fuck do I even begin?
Yeah, and it was strange because being a lesbian or being associated being as a lesbian was very open, you know.
Right, so people at school.
People at school were saying, you know, people were like, oh, you know, have you got a boyfriend? Or a girlfriend,
right.
you know, so they were quite open-minded, but transness, that was a secret. Mm. I suddenly had a secret that I couldn't tell and couldn't dare tell anyone because it was far too controversial, far too, you know, something that happens to other people.
Mm.
And we'd, you know, there'd be slurs that would be thrown around,
yeah,
like quite
yeah.
openly and not,
oh, yeah,
not offensively,
yeah, yeah.
just that's just the way it was. And mm. so at 15, I realised that I had this secret. And I went to my school nurse, actually, and just kind of sat in silence. And she kind of, my friend had told her what had happened. And she was quite worried for my welfare. And mm. so rang my mum. And my mum was like, you know, what's happened? What's wrong? And the school nurse told her that I was trans.
And oh, that feels like a
yeah.
breach of, I mean, there's that. That's really...
yeah.
I mean, yeah. I understand... if you're worried about a child harming themselves, something has to happen. But also that's a really big thing to tell someone's
Massive,
parents without
yeah.
their consent.
Yeah.
So how did you...
So it was a very... So I was in the car coming home. My mum, bless her, like took me and drove me back from school every day, even though it was, you know, miles and miles out mm. from where we lived in a very small village. And the phone rang and I knew it was the school. And I have never had a car ride quite the same in that it was absolutely silent. I knew that she basically pulled over on the side of a motorway, had the phone call, came back in, and it was silence. And then we
oh my gosh, you were in the car?
I was in the car. And
oh,
she was having
hurry.
This conversation outside. And yeah, I went home and my mum, bless her, sat on my bed and was like, can you tell me how you feel? And I was like, I couldn't draw something. I was very into, you know, drawing and art at the time and literally just drew like a box. And I was like, I can't get out. Felt very, very stressed. And she, I didn't know this at the time, but she went to the doctor and said, what, you know, what can we do? And the doctor said, well, I should grow out of it. Don't worry, just hold off. And so we never spoke about it again. Never until I came out again, coming back to multiple coming out,
yeah.
until I gave my mum a letter and said, I'm trans. And she thought it passed because I started to have boyfriends. She thought, oh, well, we thought it had all been sorted out.
Oh, right. Okay. So then you weren't identifying as a lesbian either. It was...
I don't know. It
yeah.
was kind of, I liked girls and I liked boys. Maybe
so,
I was bi,
so,
maybe
yeah.
I wasn't. I don't know. It kind of was all fluid. I hadn't
yeah.
decided to put
also,
any labels
no
on
No one
it.
Needs to put a label. You know, there were people listening right now that feel like that right now and they may feel like it forever.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, that is an identity.
Yeah. But interestingly, the themes of the book is, you know, my mum thought that my sexuality was, had, I don't know, sorted itself out, I guess, or
mm.
I'd figured out
that
a
was
path
a phase.
Based on my like gender and, no, oh, sorry, my gender had figured itself out because of who I was dating.
Right.
So this
yes.
is how they sort of interconnect is that my mum, you know, transness wasn't an option because I'd had a boyfriend.
Yeah.
So the idea that I could be a gay man was completely inconceivable.
Yeah. So, as you say, the book opens at sort of the beginning of the breakdown of a relationship. Mm. So, where were you at in that point in as far as your identity? Where we meet you in the book?
Yeah, so I start the book and I've been out as a trans man. It's kind of different to other trans memoirs in that I've already transitioned. It's not a transitioning memoir and a step-by-step guide or anything like that.
No.
It starts and I've had top surgery a couple months before.
And so what age would you have been at this point when you...
23.
Right, okay.
So I've had top surgery. I've been on hormones for a good few years. Mm-hmm. Sort of got to get my feet with masculinity and being a man as an adult and being a boyfriend and being a son and, you know, any sort of coming out issues when parents have completely sorted themselves out. Mm-hmm. We were on the right path.
Yeah.
And then this relationship broke down and I'd been in this relationship for the best part of 5 years. I'd always had my adulthood with her.
And your transition.
And my transition.
Which I imagine makes you very interconnected,
absolutely.
You know, very close if you're going through that and that's the person that you're going to.
Yeah, she's seen me change completely and been with me and very supportive throughout. Mm-hmm. In fact, she actually came to one of my appointments where I got testosterone. So we were very, very close. And so when that ended, I was disorientated, a mess. I didn't know who I was outside of that relationship.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant for me, but she knew that I liked men. I knew that she liked women. And so it was a very kind of kind parting of we need to do this.
That's good.
For each other to be able to have this time to explore ourselves and go off and do that. And I kind of wanted to do that with my best friend, which is who she was, but we couldn't, you know. And so she went off on her path and I went off on mine. And that's where the book starts. Mm-hmm. And then I start to figure out what Grindr is and what Bears and Twinks and private Twitter accounts and underground scenes and leather daddies and, you know, jock straps, whatever. I didn't know what was about to come, essentially.
And so what is it like navigating Grindr? So I only know about Grindr from like looking over my gay male friend's shoulders and being like, oh, show me that picture.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, did he send you that? Wow. So what is it? Must have been quite nerve-wracking when you set up your account.
Yeah, it really was. But also it was like so nice in that I was like, oh my God, this is like so exciting. And it was nice that I was able to explore the gay male scene from the comfort of my duvet, essentially. And like, I can just turn this off if I want to, if it's too much. But I was really excited by the prospect, which is always a good place to start.
Yeah.
And kind of built my profile and, you know, put some nice pictures on and whatever. And then messages came through and obviously they don't know if you're new or not. And so I didn't really know what the rules are or not. And so some people just sent dick pics or some people wanted a conversation about Bake Off or whatever.
Right, okay, yeah.
And so actually my two best friends now are from people that I've met on Grindr at that time. And I think it was just a wonderful way to connect with people, even if it wasn't necessarily sexual. Although it did turn sexual later on. But it took me a little while to sort of...
And what is that app like as a trans guy?
I think it's really varied, so...
I suppose who you end up speaking to.
Yeah, exactly. I think like life, you know, it really depends. Some people would be like, yeah, that's cool. And other people would be like, what do you mean? Which way are you going? I often get asked if I'm a trans woman transitioning, which is, I find funny. But it really just depends. Mm. Sometimes there's inappropriate comments. Like,
is it something that you'd put on your profile?
Yeah, I actually thought about this quite a lot and... I write in the book quite a lot about the need to keep coming out. So, for example, if you're in a club and you're dancing with someone and you're going to maybe take them home or whatever, like when do you come out? Is it when you first start speaking? That feels too soon. Or is it when you start kissing? Does that, would they feel comfortable with that? Is it when you go back? That feels too far down the line. You know, at what point is it okay? Do you have to come out? And obviously, the whole point of a gay bar is that you don't necessarily have to come out to each other if you're gay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
So when did you have you worked out when that moment should be?
No. if anyone knows,
email it.
Yeah, let me know, please. And so sometimes I took it off my profile, and then I found that I have to repeatedly come out.
Right.
And then I didn't want the rejection of then, someone's profile disappearing or being blocked or something. And so I decided just to put it on my profile. It's not something I hide. It's something that's all over my social media. Yeah. And I've written a book about it now. Yeah. So I wanted to put it front and center, not because I feel like I have to disclose myself, just because it's such a part of who I am that it feels weird to not have on.
Yeah.
So I decided that's probably where I feel comfortable is to have it on there. People can choose to talk to me or not. If they can't be bothered to read my profiles, yes, then that's on them.
It absolutely is. And so I know that, you know, you mentioned in the book it gets raunchy the further along we go. And you talk about going to spaces that are, you know, not just gay bars, but like specifically gay male places, like going to a sauna.
Yeah.
Somewhere I've never been. No one's invited me yet. But I'm not sure. I did once accidentally walk into a dark room with Tom Allen, but that's a different story. We didn't know it was there.
Spill the tea. That's exclusive.
No, we literally went, this isn't for us. And went downstairs and carried on drinking wine. The things you'll find in Vauxhall. Anyway, again, you know, I can only come from where I'm sitting. You know, I remember the feeling of walking into a gay bar for the first time and feeling enormously liberated.
Yeah.
And I maybe wonder that initially 10 years ago or, you know, 8 years ago, you might have had similar feelings. But then to re-enter those same spaces with an identity that is more honest, but is different. How was that?
I had a couple of experiences of going to different bars. So when I was growing up, just on the parameters of Manchester, would sort of stay on to the last stop at Chorlton Street intentionally, going past all the places that I needed to go to. But I was like, oh, I'm just going to go to Chorlton Street because that's near the gay village.
Right.
And that's, you know, exciting. Mm-hmm. And I sort of, you know, did a pilgrimage, I guess, and saw the signs, which was welcome to Manchester's gay village, which at the time I thought was more of like a warning than a welcome. Like, you know, there are gay people here. And I was like, oh, that's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, so I kind of had I was at Manchester Village and kind of had a look from the outside. And then I moved to London when I was 18. And because I wasn't transitioned and was still sort of figuring out my gender identity, had gone to quite a lot of lesbian bars and nights. So I've been to She Soho and Butch Please and Gal Pals and whatever. And loved it, but kind of felt like, I don't know, it was a great night. I didn't feel uncomfortable at all. I felt like I had a really good time with my friends. And then re-entering that different spaces as a gay man, suddenly where before I was kind of pushed to the side by gay men sometimes and, you know, beaten to the bar and kind of ignored, now I was suddenly recognised. It was like, okay, well, in the matter of 4 months, and your voice has got deeper and maybe you've got slightly broader shoulders because you've been working out, suddenly you're noticed. And I'd gone from being invisible to visible in gay spaces, in the ones that gay men are in. And I found that really interesting. And also now, and if I was going to Shiso with my friends, I'd have to be counted as one of the men, you know, with a bunch of friends. So I wouldn't be able to go in there without them.
Yeah,
really,
you can win by yourself.
But, you know, 2 months before I could. So I found it very jarring and confusing. It's like, what spaces are for me and which ones aren't? I think we're getting slightly better now. Like, I know that, like, Gal Pals, for example, is very, Butch Please is very trans masculine inclusive.
Yes.
But at the time, I wasn't sure whether it was or not, or whether I could be there, whether it's appropriate for me to be there. It was quite confusing to figure out.
Yeah, that sounds it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And what about in spaces like going to a sauna? Does that feel, if you're happy to talk about that, I know you talk about it in the book, but it like is, because that feels, you know, it's an exclusively gay male place. And it's, And by that, I mean incorporating all gay men, including trans men. You know, it's a space for all sort of gay male people. Mm. And I don't know, was it more or less frightening than going on Grindr?
Oh, suppose. My God, more.
Well, yeah, because more. You said before about Grindr being, you know, from the comfort of your own bed.
Yeah. This was genuinely one of the most terrifying things I'd done, not because I felt like I was in danger, although that can definitely happen in those spaces, because you essentially get naked and then have a towel around you, or people just, you know, don't have the towel.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh God, everything's going to be on show. But I am fascinated by queer spaces. Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like, for me, it'd be very liberating, very affirming to be in that space as a trans masculine gay man. And I didn't necessarily have to do anything. Mm. You know, there's no, you don't have to have sex.
No.
I was very happy to go in, have a towel around my waist. I'd forgotten, actually, in that moment that I had top surgery scars as well. But I kind of just thought, now I'm just going to, you know, just be, just hide
did
everything.
Did you go by yourself?
Yeah.
So brave. I did.
Thank you. And yeah, it was scary, but I was happy just to sort of take it in and just watch. That sounds very like voyeuristic, but just kind of.
Don't worry. I think that there are a lot of men in saunas that don't mind being watched.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if there's anywhere to be voyeuristic, that's
well.
The
sometimes they just like purposely do it in front of you. But yeah, just kind of see what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'd read so much about it,
and it must have felt like, as a gay man, it must have been like, well, that's unbelievably exciting.
It is.
Dragon.
It is, and yes, it is both, but it is also terrifying. So actually, one of the times I did go there, I did end up having sex with someone, and actually they were very inclusive, but at the start they sort of reached down my towel and were trying to find something that wasn't there.
Mm.
And I found that difficult, especially in a dark room where you can't necessarily see each other. And
did you say anything, or did they just think, oh,
well, they felt person. What was there,
right,
and said to me, you know, it's okay, are you okay?
Oh.
And so actually that put me at ease, and it's not necessarily what I thought would happen in a sauna. I actually
the kindness you find in a sauna.
I know.
You know? You find it where you don't expect it.
Do you know what? I find there's so much respect in those spaces.
Yeah.
And that people, if you don't want to have sex with someone, or you just want to sit there and have a chat about, you know, what's on at the theatre, people are like, yeah, it's fine. It's more respectful sometimes than in gay bars,
yeah,
in that people recognise that you're each other, each of you are vulnerable.
Also, there's an honesty to it.
Yeah. And then you go to the bar area afterwards and you just sit and have a chat.
Yeah.
And you never see those people again. And that's kind of the, I guess it's born out of a need, you know, for spaces like that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think it's wonderful that they exist and you have these experiences and they can just be one-time things, and you meet these people and get their life story and you never necessarily have to see them again.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a magical thing.
Yeah, and there's, yeah, as I said before, there's an honesty to that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
That you're not trying to pretend that it's going to be a thing or...
Yeah. But it was terrifying. Like, there's one sauna that has, like, showers, and it's hot, really hot. Mm. Like, you do have to shower, and it's very nervous about taking my towel off and stuff. But, you know, people are all shapes and sizes, you know. Mm. Other people are very conscious about how they look,
sure,
whether they've got a penis or not. And I think that taught me that just because I'm trans doesn't mean that, you know, my body issues are any different to anyone else's, really.
Yeah,
you know, people have all kinds of different feelings about their bodies. So actually it was kind of nice to feel not alone in that.
Yeah, different but the same.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really nice. And it's surprising where you can find community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm fascinated by this idea at the moment that community is not just, you know, in protests or in bars. Mm. Me and my partner have just started going to a queer rugby club.
Ah, nice.
It's touch rugby, so it's not, you know. But it's really nice because it's born out of Pride in Touch, which is a like rugby club, I guess, and then also the West London Queer Project. And I used to be a very sporty kid, and sport stopped when I transitioned because I was very nervous about my body and which teams I could play in or which ones I couldn't.
Yes, and there's so much dialogue about that.
Yeah.
In press and in, you know, even when it comes down to, you know, people doing stuff for a hobby, for fun, you know, people trying to politicise an incorrect narrative.
Exactly, yeah. And about like hormone levels and the rest of it. But this is a grassroots club that has inclusivity at its heart. Like when we're talking about kit, it's like, well, we're not going to have gendered kit. Maybe we have kit that fits this body shape, or we have, you know, several different options and things. And it's nice to be on a team with my partner and with men. It is a mixed group, but I've never had that experience before of being in a team with other, and playing with other men. Mm-hmm. And it's that in terms of community, it's in the bars and it's on the streets and protests, but it's also in bookshops and cafes and sports clubs and podcasts.
And it's something that I'm finding now as a relatively new parent. We've got like, you know, rainbow families where we live, and there's, you know, they put on things and we've met people and people that you wouldn't necessarily normally know because you don't work in similar spaces, you know, and that's really lovely that, you know, regardless of how we've come to be parents, there's a unspoken understanding of what we're all striving for.
Yeah.
To make the world as nice a place as possible for our kids.
Yeah. So when we're talking about queer spaces, it's also at the school gates, right?
True.
Right? It's also wherever you want it to be.
Yeah.
Because that's also where we exist. So
totally.
I kind of am advocating as much as I can for queer spaces, not just to be in the shadows, but to be, you know, everywhere.
And not just to be around booze.
Yeah, of course.
I think is a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, and for it to be, you know, not to suggest that queer people are any more likely to have an alcohol problem. I don't know the stats on that. But I think it's hard when all of your socialising, if you want to do it in a gay space, it has to be in a bar. And then when you're in a bar, you're like, oh, well, I'll have a drink.
Mm, yeah.
You know, which isn't necessarily the healthiest way to live. And so having those spaces, I'm a little older than you, but there was a cafe. What was it called? People would be screaming. There was a cafe just around the corner from Tottenham Court Road that was called First Out, something like that, around the corner in Tottenham Court Road. And I remember going there and I knew it was a gay cafe. A lot of hummus, as you can quite imagine. But
vegan and veggie options
plenty. But I remember going in there for a coffee and I was very newly out and I was very frightened. But just being like, oh my God, everyone in here is gay. This place is full of gays. How exciting. But you know that place doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I used to go to a coffee shop just near Euston called Kink and Kisses or something.
Right, okay.
And it was run by a trans woman who did the most amazing like cake and like hummus and all these kind of different foods. And that doesn't exist anymore. But I remember going up to her like when I just came out and I was like, oh, I'm trans too. And she's like, yeah, so do you want a piece of cake? You know, and it was just such a nice space because you didn't have to say who you were. You didn't have to say anything. You could just sit, read some magazines.
Yeah.
Whatever,
now, that's interesting when you say, oh, I'm trans as well. Was there, as soon as you had, I guess because there's a couple of comings out for you, but when you sort of grabbed hold of a label that worked for you, whether that's a gay guy or not, was there a liberation in that you just needed to tell everyone?
Yeah, I think so. Because it affirms what you know about yourself.
Right.
I think. If there's a label, I mean, labels are problematic in all kinds of ways, but also it attaches you to community.
Yes.
And so, and people can start to understand. Mm. And it's like, oh, right, yeah, I've seen something about that in the news.
Yes.
Or I've seen,
or I can Google that.
Yeah. So I got quite excited when I had that. I was like, oh, I know what this is. That's great. And when I first started to realise I was trans at 15, it wasn't actually called trans, really. It was gender identity disorder.
Right.
And so I struggled at that time with it being a disordered person.
It's
like,
yeah.
I don't feel like a disordered person. I don't feel like I have a disorder. I'm just a person.
Yeah.
And so the language has changed so much to being trans, to being transmasculine. And it used to be FTM, female to male, and
it's
not really now unless you're on Pornhub. And
right, okay.
That's suddenly become like a porn category, which is weird because I found a statistic not too long ago that in gay porn, FTM has like risen in the rankings by like 5% or something.
Right.
So it's interesting how much language has changed. But yeah, I did want to sort of tell everyone that I'm trans, and it's my experience. Like, I'm a man with an experience of girlhood, and it informs every decision I'm in and every moment that I, well, every thing that I do in every moment I'm in. And so it's weird not to be able to speak about that just openly and say, oh yeah, when I was at like school and we did netball, and they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I was in netball.
And so was that the same for you when you realised, or when you, I don't know, is realised the right word? You were gay. Did you have a similar amount of desire to tell people?
I think I sort of always, I didn't know if gay was, I mean, I don't know, it depends how we sort of define coming out, really. I didn't have to come out to my parents as gay for a second time. I just kind of was like, they knew that I dated men growing up, and so
right.
I was like, well, I've got a boyfriend now, and they're like, okay, cool. Like, once you've gone through like coming out as trans, they're like, do you know what, anything is fine, whatever you want, as long as you're happy, which is obviously the right thing to say. And so I didn't really have that massive second or third coming out as gay, but I've kind of found the place that feels right, and it's as a gay trans man. And I really like that label.
Yeah. And you mentioned your partner before. Mm. Were you keen to, like, were you frightened about finding a boyfriend? Was it something that you, like, really desired? Were you, like, on the lookout for a boyfriend when you first joined those apps and went into those saunas?
Yeah, I think I'm most comfortable with a partner.
Because of growing up and having that long-term relationship.
Yeah, I really struggle with being alone, and that's something that I have to, you know, lockdown I found really hard because I was single for the start of it. And I sort of was staring at the walls and had to do, I had to really struggle with being on my own. So I feel most comfortable with a partner, and so it came completely naturally to me to want to find a partner.
Yeah.
And interestingly, when I first came out to my mum via letter, which is like a second coming out as trans, her first reaction, sadly, was like, well, who's going to want to be with you? Like, what? Who's going to love you, essentially?
Yeah.
And that didn't come out of a place of being horrible. That was a place of, I care about your future. I don't want things to be hard for you. But who's going to, you know, what does your future look like?
I in a different way, but like, I remember my mum being really worried that I would be alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, just, like, she had no idea how big our community is, and that, you know, there's family within our community.
Yeah.
But I think that's, and you know, now as a mum, I still don't think that she used the right language sometimes, but I get it a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the idea of my little girl ever being lonely is heartbreaking.
Yeah And it came out of that, and it wasn't necessarily the right way to put it, but I also think it sort of came out of patriarchy and misogyny, of that, like, women, as I was, as she understood me at the time, you know, when I was younger, everything was about, like, you know, what you're going to be when you grow up, who's going to be your husband, what does your wedding dress look like.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't know, you know. And so everything's about, I write in the book actually this about like, I don't know, what's the TV show where, like, one person gets married?
Say Yes to the Dress? No.
No, it's the other one. They get married, but the man, like, organises it.
Oh, fuck, what is that called?
Whatever it is. Should I Google it?
Yeah, it's like, the most astonishing show about how much men don't know their wives.
Yeah, exactly. Wedding programme.
What is that show called?
Don't Tell the Bride.
There we go. Well done.
Well,
we got there.
Reached there into the depths of my brain. So I talk about Don't Tell the Bride, and how the reason why that isn't an entertaining show is because the man is, like, supposedly unbothered, hasn't dreamt about this his whole life.
Yep.
You know, he's kind of like, oh, well, I'm going to do it in the rugby club because that's, like, where we hang out. And the woman or the girl is like, you know, I have dreamt of this day forever, and it's going to be this massive moment.
Yep.
And I kind of felt like the misogyny in that was akin to what kind of my mum was saying, well, who's going to be with you? So what are you going to be? Like, what is your meaning in life if you're not going to be a partner? And so I had to deconstruct that a little bit. But I never felt like I was, could not love or be unlovable.
Yeah.
Like, loving and being loved comes so naturally to me that it never crossed my mind that I wouldn't ever be able to have a partner.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I have so much to give and so much to enjoy about other people as well. So I found getting a boyfriend, like, just a lovely journey to be on. And people were, you know, it's not all horrible out there. People are really lovely.
Yeah.
You know, there are gay men who not only just embrace trans people, but, you know, actively support and help. And that was great. And my partner is an advocate and supports me in every way that he possibly can. And that doesn't feel forced. That's completely natural.
Yeah. You're such a story of hope.
Thank you.
Which is lovely.
Yeah, I felt like it was important in the book to put in some of the hardships, but also some of the joys, and that our realities, you know, are not all doom and gloom. Like,
no, totally.
I have such a loving family, and that's not to say there isn't struggle. It just means that I've reached a point where I feel so content, so happy, so loved, and I've got my engagement party tomorrow, which feels like I didn't know if I was ever going to get there, but here I am, and I can eventually, hopefully, fingers crossed, be legally a husband. That feels amazing, since that kid that was like drawing a wedding dress being like, I don't know if this is right for me.
Yeah,
it's amazing. It can happen, and I guess that's the reason why I've written a book, is to tell other people that it can happen for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're going to give a lot of people some joy, Harry.
I hope so. I hope it is there. It's there to find.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that, like, if maybe you're in a situation where you don't have a family that are as supportive, you know, there's loads of places that you can turn to, and there's people you can reach out to, and there's a community, but also there's places like Stonewall that do incredible work. So if you've listened to this, but you're feeling a bit lost afterwards because maybe you don't have that support network, There will be places for you to find it. And I think Stonewall's probably maybe a good place to start.
Or Grindr.
Or Grindr.
I found my best friend on Grindr, and we just spent Christmas together as like a queer family.
Okay, listen, I don't know an awful lot about Grindr, but fine, I'll join it. Fine! I'm such an advocate for gay men. I've joined Grindr. You're welcome, boys. So the final question that I ask everyone that comes on the show, and it can be a version of you, or it can be someone that's going through a similar thing right now. I'm thinking of that version of Harry sitting on his bed with his mum and drawing a box and saying that you don't know how to get out. If you could reach out to him or to someone that's in that box right now, what would you say?
That question never gets old, does it? Like, it I think everyone sort of wants to say the same thing of it will be okay.
Yeah.
What I want to say is that it will be hard, and it will be rewarding, and it will be, the journey is kind of, it's not the end point that's important. You'll learn so much and it will, I think it reassurance, but also a bit of reality, in that you will, you know, it will be difficult at times, but you will get through and you will find people who love you, and you will find people that want to listen to what you've got to say and embrace every part of you. And those people are there, and you will find them. And there are still people to find.
Oh, there's so many of us to find. Harry, I've loved this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, me too.
Oh, that was so wonderful. Please support Harry, buy his book. Let's get loads of people reading that book. What an interesting story, and what a lovely, lovely man. I love chatting to him. Okay, let's catch up again next week. I hope that whatever you're doing well, and I'll speak to you in a bit. Take care. Bye.